Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Podcast Network Asia.
One of the main things that holds the United States at the top of the economic global stage and the developing countries back is the reserve currency. Right now, the US dollar is the reserve currency of the world. That's an exorbitant privilege that the US has that boosts the economy artificially because other countries around the world place their trust, hold their reserves in dollars, which boosts the value artificially of the dollar. Now, if there was something other than the US dollar as a global reserve currency, then that puts the entire world on a neutral currency. That puts the entire world on an equal playing field, then the United States and the Philippine economies become much closer because there's no artificial kind of currency wars that inflate the dollar over everything else. So I believe in maybe it's 10 years, maybe it's 2 years, maybe it's 20 years, countries around the world will wake up to the fact that the US dollar is not a fair reserve currency.
And good evening, good afternoon, good morning to wherever you're watching this podcast or listening to this podcast here in the Philippines and all over the world. My name is RJ Ledesma and welcome to my podcast, the RJ Ledesma Podcast. Now, in my podcast, I like to speak to pioneering business personalities and entrepreneurs to learn more about how they think about doing their businesses, what are their success secrets, can we replicate those same success secrets in our own businesses? How have they innovated, pivoted, evolved their businesses during the pandemic period? And more importantly, what opportunities do they see emerging in the new normal? And what are these opportunities which we can also share with the rest of our listeners? Is there a business personality or entrepreneur that you would like me to interview here on the podcast? Please do let me know. I would love to learn from them. Just drop me a message. And we are also live right now on Kumu and on YouTube. Tonight, a very interesting startup right out of Boracay. And that startup is called Pouch.ph. Pouch.ph is one of the most innovative startups in the country. It enables faster, more affordable, and more borderless payments via Bitcoin's Lightning Network, which we'll find out more about later on. Pouch is currently running its closed beta for a select group of individual early adopters, as well as 250-plus merchants in Boracay. And Pouch was founded by Ethan Rose. Ethan is an American expat who made his way here to the Philippines. He is the founder and CEO of Pouch, which he founded back in 2021. It is a Bitcoin wallet service that uses, again, the Lightning Network to enable customers to seamlessly send and receive money across borders. Now, Ethan, before coming over to the Philippines, previously worked as a senior software engineer for several years in Seattle at Uber, T-Mobile, Mighty AI, and Aurora. And later on, he will tell us how he came across the pain point that made him develop Pouch.ph. And with that, let's please welcome on my show, Ethan Rose, all the way from Seattle, Washington. Ethan, thanks for waking up for us.
It's a true pleasure to be on. Thank you for having me on, RJ.
Thanks so much, Ethan. And just so that people know, what time is it right there? It's 7:04 p.m. right here in the Philippines. It's
4 a.m. here in Seattle. But I'm often up in like through the night, basically, in Philippine time zone. I'm only here for a little bit in Seattle, just coming back home, visiting family, business folks. But I'll be coming back to the Philippines very soon. I have moved fully to the Philippines around a year ago to Cagayan de Oro City, which is my wife's hometown.
Oh, great. I'd love to hear more about that story of you and your wife and coming over here to the Philippines. But before we get into that one, when we talk about Pouch.ph here right now, maybe you can give us a little bit of an elevator pitch, meaning, you know, for many people here, they're aspiring entrepreneurs. They also want to learn to say, hey, if I was going to pitch my concept to a venture capitalist or investor, how would I pitch it? And how exactly do you pitch the idea of Pouch.ph? What is it in an elevator pitch format?
Yeah, the very boiled down pitch is that Pouch is a financial company using the Lightning Network, Bitcoin's layer 2 payment protocol, to enable faster, cheaper, and more connected payments across the world. So the Lightning Network is revolutionary innovation in payments. It's going to change the world. It's akin to the internet protocol for money. And so it's very disruptive. And we believe that the Lightning Network will soon be the standard. People, just like Western Union is a network, a payment network. Visa is a payment network. Even GCash is a payment network. Mm-hmm. Lightning is the one payment network that's open source that will standardize them all, just like the internet all speaks the same language. And it's called the Internet Protocol. That's what, from a technical perspective, that's the technology that we're using that we believe is very disruptive. We're bringing that technology to the Philippines, connecting it to the Philippine economy, so that now how this translates to real world benefits is for our OFWs saving a ton of money on fees when sending money back home. If you're in the Philippines and you need to send payments out of the Philippines, which is much less common, but also expensive use case, you can do that much more affordably. What we're proving in Boracay is that the Lightning Network is a standard QR payment protocol for e-wallets, even foreign e-wallets. So unlike QRPH in the Philippines, where e-wallets within the Philippines are and interoperable, Lightning accomplishes the same thing, but globally. So I can bring my US-based e-wallet linked to my US bank account and just make a simple QR payment. No need to deal with money changers, ATMs, or cash pickup counters at M. Louilly or something like that. So that's a really long elevator pitch, actually. So
that was an elevator ride, I see. Yeah.
I tend to get a little winded, so I apologize in advance.
I actually appreciate it. And there are a couple of things which I wanted to ask, because, you know, I often take the standpoint when I do this podcast of somebody listening to these concepts for the first time. So the first one which I wanted to bring up over here is with regard to the Lightning Network. So, you know, and I'm, even myself, I'm not too familiar with it. Where was this where is the Lightning Network developed? And why is it you? Why do you have the opportunity to bring it over here? For me, like since I'm here for the first time, is it something that was developed out of Seattle, and that's why you're able to be one of the first movers to bring Lightning over here?
No, the Lightning Network is completely open source. So it was published by it was a concept, a white paper proposed around 7 years ago now, by some developers who wanted to give an open source kind of proposal to scale Bitcoin. The problem with Bitcoin is transactions are very slow and expensive. That is by design. You hear a buzzword, blockchain technology, all the time. A lot of people throw around the term blockchain without really understanding very well what it means. A blockchain is, it's simply a decentralized database, but being decentralized, it accomplishes, nobody's in control of it, really. The more decentralized something is, the more spread out it is. But the trade-off is it's slower because you have to, anytime you update that database, you have to actually update a million databases around the world.
That's right, that's right.
So that's the problem, the scaling problem of blockchain by definition. So the Lightning Network is, it's actually a fairly simple concept of opening a payment channel between two participants. So anybody can run a Lightning node server. Anybody, if you know how to code, you could literally build your own implementation following the white paper, following the specifications. Like it's just a server that speaks the same language with other servers. So, and that is why I compare it to the internet protocol. Mm-hmm. Because nobody owns the internet protocol, right? It's not Google's patented invention. The internet protocol belongs to the world, really. It's completely open source. So Lightning is the same way. No company owns it. The world owns it. Humanity owns it. And that's why that is one of the most beautiful things about the Lightning Network, actually. Because if I were to be a payment processor, if I wanted to start a company as a payment processor, I would need to get permission traditionally from Visa to start accepting credit card payments and maybe some other payment channels like companies. They would have to onboard me, approve me, and it would take a long time to jump through all those processes. But with the Lightning Network, I can spin up a server, download a piece of software, and instantly become a payment processor that's already compatible with thousands of other entities around the world.
Now, having said that, I was wondering, you were saying, you know, from when I was reading the brief about Pouch.ph, you were saying it's an easy way for you to pay converting Bitcoin into pesos, basically. That's what it does. It's also a way for you to make the payment much easier. And the conversion happens in between with Pouch.ph. But you're also saying that OFWs can send money home. So you're saying this can be a conversion from QR into cash, or cash into cash as well, coming to the country. Is that right?
Correct. So initially, I built the Pouch wallet for myself, really, because I hated giving so much money to Western Union and fees. Western Union takes around 7% on average in fees, which is pretty massive. So if I'm getting a paycheck and I want to send $1,000 back to the Philippines, I'm paying $70 just for that transfer. Like, all Western Union did was move a little bit of money for me. Why am I paying so much? Right. So I really hated those insanely high fees. So I built Pouch for myself, first of all. And our first early users were often geeky, technical, like Bitcoiners like myself, who are also just looking to save money and sending money overseas. But the problem is the user experience is very technical. It's very complicated, like dealing with QR codes. You already have to own Bitcoin, send it to exchanges. So what we've more recently done to solve that is partnered with Lightning companies around the world. So the biggest one that we've partnered with is Strike in the US. Strike is a Lightning wallet with US dollar rails, US bank transfer rails. So if you're an OFW living in San Francisco, let's say, you can download Strike and you can link your bank account in the US. And then you can pick a bank in the Philippines from the list and choose how much you want to send. Just like, feels like a traditional remittance, but it actually goes through Pouch in the background. And we just use the Lightning Network to settle between companies so that we save a lot of money on the a lot more efficient for the international settlement. And the payment is instant. You get pesos in your Philippine bank account instantly. And it only costs you around 2.5% end to end for the entire process, as opposed to 7% from Western Union.
If that's the case, I mean, this is just me speaking as a businessman. Wouldn't the bigger opportunity be to offer this really as a payment option, a C2C or a B2C payment option for OFWs to adapt, given the diaspora of people sending money over here, than to do a test case out of Boracay, which I understand. I mean, of course, it's great, right? And using it for this for merchants, right? But for me, what I'm seeing is that, you know, we're sending $11 billion back from all over the world. A bulk of that comes from the US. If they wanna hack the process, then just use Pouch and just send the money to your local bank over here, because it can go all the way to rural banks. You can go all the way to far-flung banks. You can go to the pawn shop, the Cebuana Luliers of this world, and they can pick up the money there.
Yeah, so actually, this is something in retrospect as an entrepreneur. Like, I learned plenty of lessons over the past year, right? One is that, like, frankly, our work in Boracay, well, it makes a lot of noise. It sounds really good. It's not really a viable business right now. I mean, we lose money and maintaining relationships with the businesses, just everything about like serving, doing payment processing in Brakei. We don't charge the merchants anything, actually. And even if we did start charging them 1% like GCash would, we still wouldn't make back our costs at any scale, pretty much. So that one, our intention from the beginning was to help the OFW market, the $36 billion of remittances that come into the Philippines every year. And of course, that's a multi-billion dollar market. And those fees are usually going abroad, going back to Western Union corporate headquarters, right? And not staying in the Philippines. So we also want the fees, even the fees that we do collect, to stay and boost the economy of the Philippines. If we can get all the volume from Western Union to pouch in the Philippines, that has a substantial effect on the GDP of the Philippines itself. Like, full percentage point or more of the Philippines GDP can just be saved. So this was really the market that we were going after. The efforts in Boracay, on the one hand, kind of a waste of money, but on the other hand, it's
an investment in learning.
it's an investment in education. And actually, for the brand and for the marketing, it really did help us to make some noise on the global stage. Because Bitcoin Island, Boracay, is one of the largest Bitcoin communities in the world.
I see.
One of the most viable places in the world for a Bitcoiner to come take a vacation and live entirely off of Bitcoin. So we've attracted digital nomads come and stay a month in Boracay and just try to live off of Bitcoin challenge for 30 days or something. So it made a lot of noise on Twitter. And that is how the companies that we've actually partnered with now found out about Pouch, is through the Bitcoin Island project. So overall, I would say, like, even if we did waste a few thousand dollars on trying to get Bitcoin Island started, really, I think it's paid itself off in these partnerships.
It's more like a marketing. I mean, I would think it's a marketing investment. I mean, that's how I would position it.
Yeah, it's a very unusual. It's not like just like running ads on Facebook, but it's a more long tail marketing campaign, I guess.
But now, you know, for me, as a marketer myself, it seems to make sense now, because being the place where the people do mine Bitcoin at Boracay and to bring it over there just makes sort of good marketing sense, just as a springboard to get the global stage there. And finally, now you can take it to the next stage. Like, you've got a case study that people can actually look at where it works. Now, having said that, the harder thing I always find on the podcast is to simplify this explanation. My wife is not into Bitcoin. My late dad was 78. You know, I would always try to explain the concepts to him on the show, and they wouldn't get much traction. Or, and I guess even your in-laws don't have much of an appreciation. How would you explain what Pouch.ph does for them?
That's a great question. And on their side, it's really the benefit is really to the sender, because the sender has always been, like, the OFW has always been the one paying the fees to send. At the end of the day, you could say, as a recipient, you could get more money, right? Because less of a cut is going, say, if you wanted to send this is true. Like, so using Western Union, if you wanted to send $1,000, maybe you'd actually end up paying $1,070. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the day, if you're sending $1,070, either one way or the other, either the sender saves money or the recipient gets more money, right? At the end of the day, when using Pouch for remittances. Now, Pouch is an e-wallet, just like GCash or Maya. So you could actually, anyone in the Philippines can download Pouch and use it for bank transfers, buy load, pay bills. And you may be able to, depending on who you pay your bills to, you may actually be able to save some money compared to GCash or Maya, because usually they mark up their fees for paying bills. So there are like little benefits like that you might find in the Pouch app. But overall, if you're not making payments internationally, it won't really feel that unique compared to GCash anyways. Hopefully, though, there are some fee savings that you can find.
Great, yeah. I'd love to talk to you offline about this one. I think as an entrepreneur, my mind is right now bursting with opportunities, and I'm just waiting to fix up everything in my head as we speak here right now. And I hope more people are actually listening to the podcast, because this opens up a lot of opportunities for our OFWs and, of course, to the different financial agencies here in the Philippines.
Awesome. Oh, actually, if I could add one more thing.
Please go ahead.
I just remembered we have partnerships with lightning-enabled gaming companies. One of them is called Thunder Games. They make mobile games.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty casual games is what they really have focused on so far. So like Bitcoin Solitaire, a Bitcoin racing game, Bitcoin block game. You play and you just earn a tiny amount of Bitcoin. For now, for anybody geographically located in the Philippines using their apps, they list Pouch as the number one cash out option. So if you play a game and you get a few sats, it translates to a few centavos. So, but we do have people who find this like, it's a nice way to pass time. And
not like the previous games where you had to actually, where you made it your main source of income, but rather just pass time and you earn something.
Yeah, right. Well, you don't have to put in money first. It doesn't have any kind of Ponzi economics to it. Compared to, I think, like Axie Infinity had more of a Ponzi element to it, because like I really wanted to try it out. But by the time I looked into it, I was like, well, just to start playing, it's going to cost me like hundreds of dollars. This doesn't feel right. Right. So I'd like just rather pass on that one. So, yeah, this one is very casual. Like, you don't earn a lot. There's no kind of Ponzi element to it. You just. They make money from ad revenue, so you'll get between games, watch a 10-second ad or whatever, and then you get a few sats. Yeah, you're not going to pay the bills by playing games. But then there is another company called Zebedee, which is more competitive, and they host tournaments. They are more PC-focused, like kind of more serious games. So I do believe, I haven't heard a success story for sure, like if anybody like making some loads of money, but there's definitely more potential to, if you're like a good gamer, say, like competitively, you could actually earn and play kind of with an international audience and win tournaments and win more decent amounts of money, I guess. So that's a little shout out to the gaming crowd, I guess.
Okay. And they're listening too. Ethan, so interesting story here so far. I like how our one discussion point has actually blown up into a lot of different opportunities as to where we can take the Pouch.ph app, and where actually what the pain point was for you to actually develop the app. Now, my next question, which is related to that one, is you found yourself here in the Philippines. And I think the story of finding yourself in the Philippines is, of course, you found yourself a beautiful Filipina bride. Tell us a bit more about the story and maybe how it relates back to you saying there's actually because I mean, usually if somebody marries Filipina, they would migrate to the States, but you chose to take the opposite route and come over here. So tell me a bit more. How did you meet your wife and what made you make that journey here to the Philippines?
Yeah. So as you mentioned, introducing me, I worked as a software engineer for my career, but I actually went to college and studied music education. I thought I was going to join the symphony as a violinist because I'd played violin all my life. I loved actually teaching. So that was my course. And I made cover songs of popular songs, like violin covers on YouTube. And I had maybe a few hundred thousand viewers on some of the videos. Like not crazy viral, but a little bit. Had a little bit of a following. And so my now wife, she was one of my fans of my channel originally. And so, yeah, we just got to know each other. And I was really intrigued. Of course, she's very beautiful. And the Philippines is very interesting. So I took a trip to go visit her. And really fell in love with the Philippines and, of course, fell in love with her. And she did come back to the U.S. Well, I petitioned her as a fiance. We got married here in the US and lived here for maybe 7 years or so before moving back to the Philippines. So she became a US citizen as well. And I self-taught programming, actually. I had been interested in computers, gaming, even myself, like through high school and even through college, IT. So it was still kind of the fallback to music education that actually made way more money. Like software engineering, you get paid way more than being a music teacher. So that's what I pursued, really. And moved to Seattle, worked for Uber, which is a massive like Silicon Valley-based tech company, worked for startup as well. And so that's how I learned kind of like the entrepreneur journey from the perspective of a software engineer. And then all the while sending money back home to support her parents, to pay the bills. And of course, that's a pain point that we were talking about with Western Union taking a big cut. And then now that we've moved back to the Philippines, there are actually some other pain points that I didn't expect. So one, for example, is getting our house in the Philippines and furnishing the house. And we went to SNR to buy an appliance. We bought a new ref. And in the checkout, my credit cards were just like declined one after the other, just trying debit cards, credit cards, because even though I had notified my banks, because they're US issued credit cards and debit cards, even though I notified them that I was in the Philippines and they knew it, like just because the purchase was such a great amount, they would just decline it. So I was stuck like just trying, like I have the money, I want to buy the ref, right? But there's no way for me to actually pay. Something like Bitcoin solves this, because with Bitcoin, I don't need permission from a bank. My money is my own, right? Banks can't decline me. So one of the beautiful use cases of some neutral kind of money. But that's another conversation for later. So I've again, like I said, long-winded, got derailed. Apologies for that. Bring me back in.
Yeah. Well, as I bring you back in, I want to know what brought you back to the Philippines, because the usual case is that, you know, for Filipinos, I mean, migration is something that many of them look forward to. But I often say, you know, sometimes when expatriates like you come to the Philippines, you're seeing opportunities that usually some Filipinos don't see unless they also have an entrepreneurial mindset. What brought you here? And I'm sure it was, you know, there are certain uncertainties, but what was the prevailing opportunity in your mind? You said, hey, you know what? I think it's time for us to move back because there's a lot that we can do over there. Because you gave perfectly reasonable jobs or in Seattle where you could get a job in a startup or a big tech company.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It's a sad reality around the entire world, not just the Philippines, but especially in the Philippines, that often countries face the most talented people, the brightest people leave the country to go work in the US and build up the United States economy, right? Which is not, it just really sucks for the Philippines, right? Because these talented engineers, like I see even software engineers go, they will work abroad, right? Because that's where you earn more money. Unfortunately, it compounds or you know, it's the Philippines loses their top talent due to brain drain is the term that heard it referred to as. So of course, I can't fault anyone for doing what's best for them and their family, right? Which is why OFWs will move abroad. Well, my own scenario, I, on a personal level, find the Philippines much more fun. As the saying goes, right? It's more fun in the Philippines. I feel like in the US, life is boring. I'm just kind of like slowly dying. It's just a grind, work and eat and sleep, and that's it. Whereas in the Philippines, there's a lot more joy and happiness and life. And so on a personal level, I really love living in the Philippines. And on the employment side, I It's true. I could make a lot more money working for a big tech company in the U.S. Any job in the U.S., of course, pays a lot more than a job in the Philippines. So I was at a point where I had enough savings to really not have to worry about my next paycheck. And so it's in a way like I'm willing to take the risk. I'm able to take the risk now of not getting a stable paycheck, but I do have the ability to serve this massive need that if the Pouch team does it really well, will make up for all the salary that I could have had working in the US and more, hopefully. It's a big risk, as we know as entrepreneurs, the success rate of startups is quite low for various reasons. But, well, I mean, especially venture-backed tech startups. But, I mean, the risk-reward profile, I guess, is aside from being very personally connected and loving my job and feeling a calling to do this, there is actually a reward that offsets even salary that I could be making in the U.S. or anywhere in the world. Because if successful, if Pouch does well and we build a billion-dollar company in the Philippines, then as a founder, of course, my share would be in the hundreds of millions of dollars, and that would be significantly more than I would have paid at anywhere, yeah. Right? So, and the driver for me, it's not the money. The money is, I don't think as entrepreneurs, you can't have long-term success if you're just chasing the money.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be passionate and you have to be really aiming to help people, provide real value for the long-term. And the money, if you're making the right decisions time after time, working hard, serving, meeting people's needs, then you will be rewarded. But it can't be your motivation.
Exactly. I get where you're coming from. It's more purposeful what you're doing here. You feel like what you're doing here is a bit more purposeful than what you might have been doing in other jobs back in the U.S.
Exactly.
But the other question I want to ask also as well is, my son is very curious to learn more about what you have to say. But then,
how old is your son?
My 7-year-old over here, very curious about Bitcoin and Pouch. But the other question I wanted to ask is, when you're doing this business, do you also take a look at sort of like the macroeconomic factors, like you were saying, okay, the Philippines? I mean, I just because I spoke to the other American expat, they were saying, you know, you have a growing population. This is your growth rate over here. This is the large amount of remittances coming in. Were you also looking at those other factors when you put a Pouch, especially when you came back? Because you sort of had an inkling of what you wanted to do, but you mean I'm sure you were looking at other factors that said, you know, this is something I want to get into.
So I didn't really. I mean, that didn't affect the decision at all.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Because again, very it's a personal problem that I'm trying to solve for myself that a bunch of other people happen to have, and it. To me, it didn't matter like whether the Philippines is growing, whether it's shrinking. Like this is, I'm passionate about this, so this is what I'm going to work on. However, I think I believe that there is a revolution coming in the next few years, which is one of the main things that holds the United States at the top of the economic global stage, and the developing countries back is the reserve currency. Right now, the US dollar is the reserve currency of the world. That's an exorbitant privilege that the US has that boosts the economy artificially because other countries around the world place their trust, hold their reserves in dollars, which boosts the value artificially of the dollar. Now, if there was something other than the U.S. dollar as a global reserve currency, then that puts the entire world on a more a neutral currency that puts the entire world on an equal playing field. Then the United States and the Philippine economies become much closer because there's no artificial kind of currency wars that inflate the dollar over everything else. So I believe in maybe it's 10 years, maybe it's 2 years, maybe it's 20 years, countries around the world will wake up to the fact that the US dollar is not a fair reserve currency and will prefer something neutral. And the only viable neutral currency is Bitcoin. Some economists speculate that the yuan is the second best that would replace the dollar. Mm-hmm. And I just believe that most of the world, certainly not the West, wouldn't follow the Chinese regime, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the world should even follow the Western American regime, right? Because every country should have the freedom and flexibility to make their own decisions, have their own culture, right? And not have to bow to some economic authority. So I believe Bitcoin accomplishes that. It's a new technology, a new monetary system akin to digital gold, available for the first time in history, and countries will adopt it. The only thing I don't know is whether it'll be next year or 20 years.
Yeah.
But I do believe that it'll happen pretty much overnight, because when we look at like banking system collapses in the US, it's always like you just wake up one day and the news is covered with the US banking system just collapsed. Like three of the largest banks in the US, like Silicon Valley Bank, just underwater. They had a bank run. Like you don't see it coming, and it just happens. Right. And so there will be one day where we just wake up and everybody is clamoring to get out of US dollars. And then that'll be the end of the currency. And yeah, it'll be a really interesting day.
Speaking of interesting, I want to go back to the idea that you thought of this idea, and earlier on we spoke about how you came up with Guing Pouch. You were just, infuriated by the amount of money that you were paying to the remittance company, so you wanted to develop it in-house. I'm guessing that when you began this company, you were bootstrapping, meaning, and for those who don't understand, bootstrapping just means that money's coming out of your own wallet to create the app. Was that the case for you? Because I guess you ideated it, you had a good idea, you developed basically Pouch.ph yourself, is that right?
Yes. For the first 6 months, I kept my day job, and I just personally, as a programmer, I was just programming it myself.
Day job in the States, or was that over here already?
I still lived in the U.S. actually at the time, so I had my day job in Seattle, mm-hmm. and actually I did. It was. During the pandemic, I'm pretty sure. I'm forgetting how the timeline of the pandemic went, because I was already like pretty much working from home anyway. So I did spend a lot of time in the Philippines though during the pandemic as well, and still working for my day job in the US, but also building Pouch on the side. But then after around 6 months, we got our banking rails in the Philippines. We launched the app, and we had a small user base already. And I had scheduled some investor calls because I had some introductions and met some very early stage investors who actually invested in Pouch. And that's the time where I quit my day job and turned Pouch into a full-time job.
And how was it like when you set up Pouch initially? Did you go to Boracay straight? Did you come back home from the States, or go to Cagayan de Oro first, where your wife's from? Or did you go to Boracay because you were saying, this Bitcoin island is something I can start the concept off in?
Actually, I hadn't physically been in Boracay until Bitcoin Island already existed.
I see.
So there was another American expat, actually, who he was also a geeky Bitcoiner like myself. He was trying to start a Bitcoin community in Zambales, and he wasn't having that much success because he was using a Bitcoin-only wallet without rails to the Philippine banking system. So when he learned about Pouch, he reached out and said, this is amazing. This is exactly what I needed to start my community. So I suggested to him, like, hey, why don't you move to Boracay? It's a massive tourist destination, right? And you can make a lot more of an impact, I think. Like, it's more of a proving ground for international tourism in a larger scale. So he himself moved to Boracay and went door to door meeting business owners and just building the connections and training people on how to accept Bitcoin for payments. So I didn't come to Boracay until 6 months later, and I spent a few months in Boracay, and we hosted a small conference, Bitcoin conference in Boracay. Yeah, at first I was in Cagayan de Oro, basically. Yeah. And our team, so we have a team of around 8 employees right now, and we're a fully remote team. So some are based in Manila Metro, and some are based in Cebu, some Boracay, some Mindanao. And we work in a virtual office. There's an app called Gather. So we have it's like a little gamified virtual office. Everybody gets desks and you can walk around and automatically join video calls. It makes it feel like we're working in person in an office, even though we're all spread out.
I'm just curious. So you live in Cagayan de Oro and with your wife. So are you Bisaya by now?
Oh, Bisaya. Historia ko og Bisaya, pero... Gamay.
Really,
I understand more. My speech is kind of slower, but I can understand it pretty well by now.
Fantastic! Really great to hear. So, before what your wife was trying to pass or trying to get by you, she can't get by you anymore, I guess, at this point.
Right. yeah. No, it's fun. I mean, I do like have asked like for translate. There's so many ways. I'm trying to learn Bisaya, right? Like there's not that many resources available online. So I'm making flashcards for myself to like learn the vocabulary. But it's been a journey. I mean, 8 years in now and I'm still not that proficient.
So I'm going to go to the chat box here, into the comment box here right now. A lot of people are very invested in the show. The first one was Ivo Contreras over here saying, amazing, amazing experience. Thanks so much, Ivo. Then we also have June Olivar saying, LFG Pouch Philippines. And Ron Adarle saying, nice one over here. Thanks so much for all those who have been listening to the podcast. I hope you're learning a lot. I'm learning a lot from our discussion here together with Ethan. So Ethan, help me move on with the story. So you came to, you asked somebody to go to Boracay, you sort of like established a beachhead for you. You guys had a conference over there and you were cognizant of the fact that if you were opening Boracay, it wouldn't necessarily be something that would generate a lot of income, but would generate a lot of interest for you to get people using Pouch.ph. Is that right?
Correct.
Now, once you did that, how was the reception? Because usually, it's one thing to ideate and create the app, but how was it? How was the people immediately take to it? Did you have a hard time? What were the challenges initially getting people to download the app or to use the app?
It really depended on the person. So when we talk to business owners for the accepting payments use case, we have to talk to the business owners. Some are very traditional and only want to use cash. Some only want to use the GCash or maybe some have the Maya POS terminal. Like some are already like set up, right? And so they don't want to try something new. But then there are others and some larger businesses, even like the Royal Indian Curry House along
yes,
the
Rich,
beach.
Yes.
Rich is very good. Like they were very receptive to like just adding a new payment system on top of all the payment systems they already have. And once we can talk to the business owner, I mean, we know right away whether they're interested or not. And I mean, we certainly don't push anyone. I mean, we don't even make money off it anyways. So we're not monetizing the business owner. So we're not trying to force anyone to start accepting Pouch. But if they do have an interest, we're really happy to just do training, get them set up with a static QR code, get the app downloaded, etc. So it really, the conversation varies. Some it's a very, very easy to onboard and some it's not so. But the main thing is we're very diligent. So we know that there is a market, there are people interested. Business owners, really the selling point for a business is attracting new customers. So if you accept Bitcoin, you get put on the BTC maps and you get promoted on social media. So you'll have a new base of high-paying international customers. That's pretty sweet for a business. However, one of our problems is we don't have that many tourists coming. So maybe in a month, we have a handful of Bitcoiner tourists. Some stick around and stay for a while. Some just come for a three-day vacation. But the point is, if you have 250 merchants and only a dozen people using Bitcoin in a given month, the businesses are not getting that much love, not nearly as much as they would have hoped or as we would have hoped. So we're finding the spender side of the equation is actually our problem for getting this economy working smoothly.
And having said that, what's the pivot that you had to make learning based on that insight?
The main pivot we made actually was just cutting our spending on acquiring businesses in Brockeye. So now we don't have a full-time employee like onboarding merchants in Brockeye. And we're not having any kind of marketing budget. We still do have the office, physical office in Brockeye. And that one, we're not using it much anymore, actually, since we're a virtual, like fully remote team. So that one we may even cut. So that's really the pivot. It's kind of the sad kind of pivot, like something that we worked so hard to build. We just found it's not economically viable. So, but it's already fulfilled its purpose, which is being a proof of concept and getting the word out. But now it's like, okay, we're time to cut our cash burning here. Okay. Because we don't see a path to making this profitable in the next few years until there's some kind of more traction.
Got that. So, but basically Barack was just really a use case to see if we could make it work. And that's, it's more of a B2B thing than a business to business rather than a business to consumer.
It's a business to small business. So some of the users are consumers that are, they're basically consumer, like sorry stores, small businesses, trike drivers. So some are personal as well. Yeah. I would say it's kind of more B2C, even though it's B2B as in small businesses. But actually where we're focusing now is we recently have re-strategized and refocused. We're taking a step out from selling spending on the payments use case and even the e-wallets use case, and we're focusing all our effort to the infrastructure use case, the B2B software as a service kind of use case. There are a lot of hurdles to starting a startup that uses the Lightning Network for payments. I mean, the Lightning Network itself is very complex. Mm-hmm. Most companies, even exchanges, don't do Lightning Network infrastructure in-house, and they're looking for third parties to manage the infrastructure for them. So we've took a step back and built basically an API version of Lightning so we can provide Lightning as a service. Actually, I want to shout out if there are any entrepreneurs or prospective entrepreneurs here looking for an idea, there's definitely a need for startups that utilize the Lightning Network as just a more connected payment system. So many interesting use cases and problems that can be solved. And we can help make the setup easy by providing the software as a service. We're happy to provide support as well as you integrate. And we'll take care of basically all the complexity of the Lightning Network. So for example, if you wanted to launch a social media app in the Philippines, like actually the way we're structuring the company, we'll actually be able to serve this product. We're calling it Pouch Core, the Lightning as a service product. We're actually able to serve globally. So the Philippines is our home and our focus, but we can also serve around the world. So if you say you want to start a, I don't know, a Twitter clone, whatever.
X clone.
Yeah. And you want to have some kind of marketplace built in as well. So people can buy and sell things. You can buy and sell things internationally, whatever the use case is. Or another example maybe is like an earning platform, a tasking platform where like Filipinos are very good at freelance work. It's a great earning opportunity. There's platforms like Task. Upwork.
TaskUs.
Yeah, TaskUs is a big company, a lot of freelance kind of work. Like if you want to start a platform like that, Lightning is a really great use case, a differentiating factor for your startup as well. And our pricing is very simple. Like it's 0.5%. That's our initial like pricing model for any transactions that you do over Lightning. And you could, I mean, even monetize it, like put a markup on it. So maybe you sell it, you charge a 1% fee, but it only costs you 0.5%. So you don't actually even have to take the risk of all the infrastructure and such. So we'd love to help. If you're having ideas and you want to start a startup, we'd love to help.
That's what I was going to ask you about. I was going to say, what are the opportunities present in the industry which you exist in? And that's basically if you're saying software as a service, Lightning as a service. And if there are other entrepreneurs who might want to be able to leverage that technology for their own businesses, it's something that they should take a look at. By the way, I just want to greet again people who are enjoying this discussion here so far. I've got here back in the comment box, Lance Tuiz, Axelrod Cavipeño saying, great, good evening, and also saying great discussion here at 7:45 p.m. Let's check that. It says great discussion. And we also have Rubes Combs saying LFG, looking for a group from the Davao DeFi community, decentralized
community. I love Davao DeFi community. I came to Davao a couple months ago, and great group.
Fantastic to hear that. We've spoken so much. We've almost done with the hour here on the podcast. But Ethan, I know it's been quite you've had quite a career in software and becoming an entrepreneur and putting a pouch also here at the same time. Maybe if you don't mind, there are people listening here right now from different communities, different entrepreneurs. Is there any advice that you want to share with them here right now about putting up a business, putting up a new business like yourself, things that you want to share that hopefully people don't make the same mistake that you made, or they can learn from what you've accomplished so far here with Pouch?
Yeah, I've learned so much. Actually, I didn't realize there was so much to know, I guess. I thought like, The coding portion is actually one hard part. And that a lot of founders of tech companies struggle with this piece because finding a technical co-founder is very challenging. But that part was the part that came easy for me. But the business side and figuring out how the SEC works, even like forming a corporation. The licensing processes, the financial reporting, pretty much everything other, marketing, business development, like everything other than software was the hard part for me. So,
by the way, I run a company called EnterPH where I help foreign businesses offshore outsource of the Philippines. I could have helped you set up.
Awesome.
That's what we do. That's what I do. So we've had success with many companies like yours that have come over here.
Very good. That's a great idea. That could have been really helpful. Context, right? And getting us set up. And so I think my main piece of advice, though, is don't be afraid of the unknown. Because you can learn and figure it out. I think one thing that holds a lot of people back from trying is the fear that I won't be successful. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know about this. And I think a successful entrepreneur just has to embrace that they don't know everything. For myself, I don't know if I could call myself successful yet as an entrepreneur. We've had some successes for sure, but we're not profitable. So that's still another massive hurdle to overcome. But really, we wouldn't have gotten anywhere if I was scared to try things that I had no idea what I was doing. So as a word of encouragement to anyone who wants to start a company, or maybe you're starting already, just have confidence, because even people who look like maybe they have it all together often have no idea what they're doing and just trying to figure it out on the fly and kind of acting the part, right? That was how I got my first job in software engineering as well. Like, I was self-taught, but really just acted confident, right? And I don't know. Of course, the expression like "fake it till you make it." I wouldn't say lie. Don't lie, but just be confident in what you know, and for things you don't know, be really willing to do research, learn, absorb as much knowledge as you can, and push forward.
Got that. And Hinzi Zabala saying over here, spot on advice. Thanks so much, Hinzi Zabala, for that input over there. And again, a lot of great learning over here from Ethan Rose, founder of Pouch. Ethan, if they want to download Pouch right now, where can they download pouch.ph?
So if you go to our website, pouch.ph, there are links to the iOS and Android app stores. Yep, so you can just click one of those download links and get it on your phone, sign up. You have to, in order to use, because it is a financial application, you do have to have a valid government ID to do your KYC process and gain full access. You get a bank account number, it's much like GCash, again, or like a bank account in the Philippines, except more international connectivity via the Lightning Network and potentially lower fees on bill payments and other kind of integrated features. So please do give it a try.
So please give it a try. That's pouch.ph. Ethan, good luck with your, I would call this an advocacy of helping, of your own contribution to the Philippine economy. Mariel Co saying right now, sign up now. It's seamless and fast. Thanks so much.
Mariel. Thanks, Mariel.
We're chiming in.
Mariel is on our team.
Yeah, thanks so much, Mariel, for adding that in. So again, thanks so much. Thanks for guesting here, Ethan. This will be one of many talks I'm going to be having over here again. This has been the Arjuna Despa podcast. Thanks so much, everybody, for listening. We will see you in the next podcast. Thanks so much, guys. We'll see you soon.
The views and opinions expressed by the podcast creators, hosts, and guests do not necessarily reflect the official policy and position of Podcast Network Asia, the hosts of the program, or other programs of the network. Any content provided by the people on the podcast are of their own opinion and are not intended to malign any religion, ethnic group, club, organization, company, individual, or anyone or anything.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.